The Zone with Jason Anderson.
This is the best hair on the station, this show here.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I never have to work that hard to come up with fun things to talk about with a friend, Ari Temkin, who joins us now here in the Zone. Joshua Briscoe, Beards McFly, Jason Anderson will be back later in the week. You can hear him on Sirius XM and at like 500 other places. Follow him on Twitter at Ari Sports. But Ari, today, I mean, we've got an absolutely full plate, and I just want to know if you want to eat your vegetables first or save them until the end, because there's got to be at least a little bit of Brussels sprout eating at some point here today.
Yeah, I mean, I guess having Kansas State and Mizzou all playing, you know, in the second round of the tournament could get weird. You know, we've seen kind of recent tournaments as a KU alum that didn't really include Mizzou and K-State. So, yeah, it wasn't so much as Kansas losing as it was also one of those teams getting into the Sweet 16. And I guess it's better that one did and not two.
Yeah.
And certainly a Big 12 team at that, so.
I have seen KU and Mizzou fans this last couple days really only smile for one reason, and it's the fact that the other team that they were rooting against did also, in fact, lose. It's kind of dark, really.
I mean, that was the only way to make this better, because it would have been significantly worse if it had it gone the other way.
Right.
You know, so it was like, As the Kansas game's coming down the wire, you're watching Mizzou kind of get blown out by Princeton, and you know, obviously the Kansas game ended first. So, yeah, I mean, it definitely made for an easier letdown.
Yeah.
I was taking on Mizzou and K-State fans left and right in my texts and tweets, and you know, obviously with K-State, you know, working on Big 12 radio, like, I'm a huge fan of Jerome Tang, and we actually recorded an interview with him after the show today, and so, you know, that'll play on tomorrow's show. But, I mean, it's hard not to root for that guy despite being a Kansas alum. I mean, he is such a good coach. I think he knows when to push the right buttons. And, I mean, he just kind of empowered his players, Tang did down the stretch of that game, to take some shots and to win it for him. And that's what happened.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and start with them then. You walked us up there, and I think it's only fair to start with a team that did handle their business. The story from going back to this roster having two players on it to both of those players being absolutely enormous, obviously Marquise Noel, the headline from their win over Kentucky. Take me back to how you were talking about the Big 12 before the year, and even if you were an optimist about Jerome Tang at the time of the hire, to where K-State lands now. I mean, it is a truly ridiculous run that they're on.
No question. I mean, look, and this is now back-to-back years in the Big 12 where the team that finished last in the Big 12 the previous year hires a new coach, and then that coach leads them to the Sweet 16. You know, Iowa State a couple of years ago was the worst team in the Big 12, and they hired T.J. Altenberger, who overhauls the roster, and they go to the Sweet 16 in year one to Rocks. And the same thing with Jerome Tang, where K-State finishes last in the Big 12 the previous year, and now they're in the Sweet 16. And look, I mean, you know, you talk to folks around the Baylor program, and I think there was excitement that, like, this guy finally gets his opportunity to do it. And then the way that he put together his roster, you kind of thought, all right, they've got a shot, but a lot of question marks. But who knew what Keontae Johnson was going to be after not having played for as long as he did? Who knew what, you know, Naquan Tomlin could be after he doesn't play high school basketball at all and is, you know, kind of known as being the street baller from Rucker Park? So, I mean, even the most optimistic among us didn't think that this was possible year one under Jerome Tang. You know, the transfer portal, in that era of transfer portal, I think kind of allows for situations in which coaches can be successful immediately as opposed to, you know, previously where they had to wait some time. But it's not just the roster construction too, Josh. I mean, it's the way that they built this roster and then just the approach of Jerome Tang. You know, they hit a stretch, they lost a bunch of games in a row, and Tang says, hey, we got to win two more to get tournament to get make sure we're eligible for the tournament, you know, and from the outside looking at it, it was like, nah, I mean, you're fine. What are you talking about? But it was really a message that was felt internally, and they go out and rattle, what, five straight wins then to close out the, you know, season before those two losses. So, like, he knows how to motivate this team. You could tell down the stretch, he was just imploring his guys to take advantage of those, of their guys. Like, think about it this way, Josh. You know, he comes out of the game and he's like, we just had better dudes.
Mm-hmm.
We just had better dudes. He's talking about Kentucky.
Yeah, I know.
He's not talking about Fairleigh Dickinson.
Right.
You know, he's not talking about Florida Atlantic. Like, he's talking about we're K-State, you're Kentucky, and we've got better dudes. Like, Eric Musselman ripped off his shirt and went shirtless after beating Kansas, and that wasn't as ballsy as what Jerome Tate did. So I love that because he says it in a way that doesn't come off as arrogant as it is. Yeah. And that's what I love about Jerome Tang is he's just not like Eric Musselman rips off his shirt and he looks arrogant doing it. Jerome Tang says, "We just got better dudes than Kentucky," and he doesn't sound at all arrogant when he's saying it. And it's true. Like Keontae Johnson, just go make a play, step back three that buried, you know, that basically puts it out in the coffin. So, you know, he, and even hosting this morning with King McClure, who played, you know, for Jerome Tang at Baylor, he mentioned, like, this dude just constantly stroking the ego and building your confidence, and he's, like, continually doing that with his players and empowering them to be the dude. And in this game, it was Marquise Noel and Keontae Johnson that were the dudes delivering them to New York City, where, of course, Mr. New York City is going to perform.
It's interesting. This is the place we started the show today, and like you've talked to more college coaches and probably have been able to experience like the different demeanors better than I have. So like I don't know if we're just closer to Jerome Tang or if I'm onto something here, but I just don't see a lot of other guys going about it the exact way that Jerome Tang does. Not just in the kind of player empowerment and encourager over, you know, screamer and shouter, because we've seen that evolution a little bit in college sports over the last, I don't know, decade or so maybe. But everything about him fundamentally, I don't know, it's the coolness. It is that sort of ability to say things. Uh-oh. Can we get Ari back while I lit it up with an even longer question? That was the most aggressive, jarring, loud hang-up noise I think I've ever gotten out of these phones. Ari must have really hated my question. It was very loud. Very disconcerting. I could keep restating what I was going to ask him, but then it kind of takes the juice out of the air for, you know, actually asking it as a question. But I am just struck by the uniqueness of Jerome Tang, both in his tone and his approach. And again, Ari, really sorry that you hated that question so much. I'll try to keep him shorter from here. But I do wonder if you see that as being a true thing where he really does stand out as one of, for the tournament field, we'll say one of 68 in terms of who he is as a coach.
No, he's extremely unique. You know, you just don't get coaches like this for a lot of reasons. I mean, number one, before the tournament starts, you know, he's going out there and he's saying, like, wow, this is, pitch me, this is incredible. Like, mm-hmm. You know, from a kid growing up, you know, in the Virgin Islands, like, this is insane. You know, like, that's the kind of stuff you just don't hear. You know, like, you just don't hear coaches stop and smell the roses. You just don't hear coaches, you know, being that formal or that honest and open. I mean, there was a point earlier this year where he took responsibility for something that happened in a game and why they lost, and basically second-guessed himself after the game. Like, you never see coaches or hear coaches doing that. And I asked him about that in our interview earlier today that I did. And, you know, he's like, yeah, I just want to be transparent. You know, I want them to be as transparent with me as possible. And how are, you know, what kind of an example am I going to set if I'm not with them? And so, like, he's transparent to a fault. You know, earlier this year where he's talking about, you know, we don't want Kansas living rent-free anymore and it's about us. And, you know, like, I thought that was an incredible rally cry. And I know that, you know, not all K-State fans are on board with that, but I'm sure they are now, given the success of the team this year. Like, there's just so many factors, I think, where it's like, we just don't hear coaches doing that, and yet here he is, and he's unapologetic about it. You know, he's not, like, in your face or anything that's, like, ultra-aggressive that's, you know, like, oh, man, I don't know if I like that. But, like, he just has a demeanor about him and an aggressiveness about him that's like, arrogant but not arrogant. Mm. And I don't know how to explain it. Like, there's an art to saying something arrogant but coming off as not arrogant, coming off as humble.
Right.
And that's what he does. Like, he's really good at that.
Yeah, it's awesome. And now, I mean, it's almost a silly question to be like, so how far can they go? Because it's the tournament, and crazy bleep happens all the time. But when you look at what worked for them against Kentucky, do you have a feel of how consistent that can be through the next game or two or three?
And look at their region. I mean, mm-hmm. Florida Atlantic, Tennessee, Michigan State, and Kansas State. One of those teams is going to the Final Four, and obviously, you know, Michigan State has a history, but I mean, they're a 7 seed here. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is as bizarre as any region gets, and it's all going down in Madison Square Garden, which is, you know, you could argue the mecca of all of basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But look, I mean, when you look at like Kansas's flaw this year was depth or lack thereof. Well, that killed them in the game against Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at Iowa State offensively this year; they struggled. That killed them in this game. That was an abomination and hard to watch against Pitt. Baylor, you know, their defense, like so. So when you look at all the teams in the Big 12 that didn't get to the second weekend, like, they couldn't overcome their flaws. K-State's flaws are obvious. They're as obvious in there as any other team we're going to be talking about. And it's just your ability to overcome that. I mean, they had turnover issues and turnover struggles this season with Keontae Johnson and Marquise Noel. So I would imagine that's what Michigan State's going to try to do. Defensively, try to force turnovers and get, you know, Marquise Noel out of his game, because as good as he was in this game and as good as he's been all year, that's been a struggle for him, not turn the ball over at a high rate. So that's going to be the key for this team. But there's no reason not to think that this team can't get into a Final Four and go far, because they've got all the pieces you need to be successful for a March run. But, yeah, I mean, making sure to not turn the ball over, that's just going to continue to be a key for them. And they were able to kind of overcome that in the first two rounds, as opposed to some of these other teams that didn't in the Big 12.
It is fascinating for Noel, like you said. So he had four turnovers in the game against Kentucky. That's half of K-State's turnovers, which was half of Kentucky's, by the way. That actually divides out nicely.
Wow.
But it is kind of funny to be at a point where you could say, hey, if he has turnover issues, that could set this team back. While also, I love for K-State the fact that they have a guy who I feel like he can take over a tournament game. Feels like he plans on it. Like I said, and you mentioned Mr. New York City and going back to New York for him being able to do that at Madison Square Garden. It's a bet or at least a gamble I would be willing to make that however far he can drag K-State in this game against Michigan State will be I imagine it will keep them in contention, but you're right that there is like one big red flag that they're going to have to avoid there, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, that was like, it's funny because the strengths from Montana State play right into the weaknesses of Kansas State.
Mm.
And you know, it's like, but at the same time, Montana State just can't compete with Big 12 or, you know, Power 5 opponents. You know, they lost to Tech last year in the first round of the tournament and got spanked by them. So it was like, on the one hand, Montana State, they turn teams over a ton, and they're able to get to the foul line a ton, which is the two biggest issues for K-State. They foul a lot, send guys to the free throw line, and turn the ball over, but Montana State, it's just a different animal when you're getting up to that next level. I mean, Colgate was the number one three-point shooting team in college basketball this year, and they looked like they couldn't shoot at all against Texas. So sometimes some of these teams feast on, you know, lesser opponents, and they kind of inflate their stats based on playing mid-major programs. And it's like you get there and you're looking at these metrics, and you're like, yeah, but that's not as big of a deal against a team like Texas that can defend you in the three-pointer like they did against Colgate, or like against K-State, where it's like, yeah, that might not bother them as much as, you know, that length may bother some other teams in that conference. So that goes away here in this part of the tournament. I mean, you've got a Florida Atlantic team that got Fairleigh Dickinson, so they've, you know, their toughest matchup was probably that first round matchup. But that East Regional Madison Square Garden is quite a thing. It's quite a thing of beauty to look at in terms of who is expected to come out of there and where they are now.
We're talking to Ari Timken, and since you mentioned the Big 12 kind of in the zoomed out version, we can push KU and Mizzou back just a little bit, because I did want to get your angle on this, where, look, two Big 12 teams in the Sweet 16 is kind of underwhelming. It's certainly less than I expected. Meanwhile, if it ends up being two Big 12 teams in the Elite Eight, that feels about right. If it's two Big 12 teams in the Final Four, that seems totally plausible with where everything stands now. What has this tournament done to your perspective of the Big 12, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, it's so tough. You know, obviously we want to look at success in the tournament and expand that out to success for a conference overall. You know, the SEC and the Big East both get three teams in the Sweet 16. The Big 12 gets two. The Big 10 gets one. So a good variety across the board in terms of, you know, conference representation. It's so matchup-oriented, Josh. Like, it really is. When you look at KU, like, KU loses, and they had a really tough matchup with Arkansas in that second round, especially without Bill Self. You look at last year, things seem to fall into place for KU in their run. But that's just how this works. You know, for K-State, things are falling into place for them, where, you know, you're able to beat a Kentucky, which people expected, but now you're playing a Michigan State team that not many people expected to be here. And though they have, you know, great experience and a really good Hall of Fame head coach, and they've won a, you know, that program's won a title and been to Final Fours, like, that's just a better draw for them given how the team's played all year when you think about Marquette. And then, you know, Tennessee potentially in the Elite Eight or Florida Atlantic. I mean, you're looking at an eight seed or a team in Tennessee that many people didn't expect to get out of the first weekend because of the injury to Zakai Ziegler. So it's so matchup oriented. You have to, you know, you got to catch some breaks in this thing in order to get the right matchups. And, you know, so why the Big 12 doesn't get further? I mean, Baylor had a really tough matchup against a Creighton team that a lot of people, myself included, felt like they were underseeded a little bit. I've got Creighton as a Final Four team. So, I mean, they're playing about as well as anybody right now. You know, and we mentioned, we talked about Kansas. So, you know, ultimately, no, I don't think it's a huge TCU playing Gonzaga, like that was a real tough draw. TCU's a good basketball team, but Drew Timmy and his last shot to get to a Final Four and win a national championship, like he's not going to go, you know, he's not going to go out quietly. So, yeah, I mean, ultimately you will be judged by what you do in the postseason, and that's fair, but I also think the context of, hey, sometimes these matchups, they don't play into how good these teams were over the course of the season, and yeah, we'll see. Josh, if the Big 12 is able to get two teams through to the Elite Eight and out of the Final Four, certainly I expect one of these two to get through to the Final Four, and I had Texas going before the tournament started.
This is kind of a wild step back considering how much basketball has happened since we were having this conversation not that long ago, but what did you think when you saw the Midwestern region, that first line flip over and see Houston and not Kansas there?
Yeah, I was very disappointed. You know, I think given the body of work, given, you know, everything we'd kind of talked about all year with quad one wins, it was seemed nonsensical. And then, you know, I'll be honest, then hearing the committee chair talk and justify it made me even more upset, because it's like, wow, this seemed dumb when it happened. It seems even dumber now. Yeah. Like, well, they had a better winning percentage in quad one, quad two games. It's like, who said anything about quad two?
Right.
Why are we lumping the quad two in there? Like, what? So, you know, but with that being said, like, I also probably didn't want Texas in an Elite Eight matchup if I'm Kansas in Kansas City after what Texas has done the last two times, you know?
Right.
Like, so, you know, I thought it was brutal. You know, you obviously wanted Des Moines and Kansas City as the two spots. They did get Des Moines. They did not get Kansas City. It was an egregious omission to considering the things that we look at to factor in who should be one and who should be two. It just made no sense whatsoever. It still makes no sense, and But with that being said, I just don't know how much of a difference it makes for Kansas's output this season.
Sure.
You know, maybe they get into the second weekend in the Midwest, but it was going to be really, really tough without Bill Self for Kansas to overcome that and make a deep run.
You're doing my segueing for me here, which I appreciate, because, look, I think we all around here have the right perspective on the job Norm Roberts did when that was not what he was preparing to do. I'm talking to Matt Tate last hour that I made a really good point of, like, hey, look, I'm making an imperfect analogy to say, hey, look, Chad Henne has done some really good work in the playoffs when the Chiefs have needed him to come through in big moments, but
right.
Also you need to get Mahomes back. It's a clunky cross-sport analogy, but Matt made a good point that one of the reasons it's a clunky cross-sport analogy is because Norm Roberts isn't the backup head coach. Like, that, he's not going through practice
right.
Every day, you know, preparing for that moment and everything. But with all of that being said, and I'm, if you have any you know, nitpicking there, feel free. But I think most people think that, hey, Norm Roberts did an admirable job in a tough spot there. But I also just can't help but wonder a little bit what looks different if Bill Self is out there. Not in a world where Bill Self is out there with stints and not at 100%, but just if Bill
right.
Self would have just been healthy and never had the scare that he did before the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Henne Mahomes thing works simply from the fact of, like, Mahomes is just special.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter, you know, even if you've got, like, let's say the 15th best quarterback in the NFL or the 14th best quarterback in the NFL as your backup quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, he's good, but he's still not on the level that Patrick Mahomes is. And that's Norm Roberts. You know, part of what makes Bill Self such a great coach, in fact, many argue he's the best in college basketball currently and certainly one of the greats of all time, is his in-game coaching ability, his ability to make adjustments. You know, would they have, you know, changed some of their defensive alignment with the way that Debo Davis was just running wild on them? And then, you know, would that have been a change that Bill Self would have made quicker? You know, what about inbound plays? Like, you just can't underestimate, in a one-point loss, how much of a difference a coach like Bill Self is going to make. Now, granted, Eric Musselman's a really good coach, too, and that was what worried me about that second-round matchup was, you know, you just don't have your ace up your sleeve with Bill Self. Now, with all that being said, you know, Bill Self and Norm Roberts didn't go out there and miss free throws like Kansas did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bill Self and Norm Roberts didn't go out there and miss all those defensive rebounds as Kansas did. So, like, I look at two things being probably more than anything why they lost this game, Kansas. I mean, the free throw shooting was bad, especially when you look at, you can't even look at the total numbers because they missed the front end of a one-on-one in multiple situations. So it's like, that's even worse
yeah.
because you don't even get the second opportunity to miss or make a free throw. The defensive rebounding was brutal in the second half. Arkansas' second chance points just destroyed Kansas. And, I mean, obviously, you know, they miss a free throw, then get their own rebound, and it's like, wow, that's just a brutal end of game situation. So, like, free throw shooting and defensive rebounding, to me, were the biggest reason they lost this game. But both of these things can also be true, right? Like, Norm Roberts can be a good coach, but he's just not on the level of Bill Self. And so they certainly could lose this game because Bill Self's not there to do the things that he's able to do in-game that make him special and make him a great all-time coach, while simultaneously acknowledging, like, on the court, they could have also done some things differently, even with Norm Roberts coaching, like make free throws, like be better on the defensive glass. And, like, those two things in particular, I mean, the officiating, you hate it, the way that it was officiated. It wasn't unfair for either side. It was just unfair for both sides because of how brutal it was for every player to be in foul trouble in this game. I just hate when games are officiated like that. And, it, you know, again, you probably figured that that would happen to KU at some point this year. They just didn't have depth. And so when your depth is tested in a game like this, it's really tough when Zach Clements has played 7 minutes since January, and now he's thrown out there in the second half of a, you know, back-and-forth game. So all those factors played into it. You know, Bill Self is an absolute difference maker as a head coach. Anybody that you know, disagrees is not watching. And, yeah, I mean, the outcome may have been different. Kansas won a ton of one-possession games this year. They won a ton of close games this year. Bill Self's a huge difference maker in that regard. So, again, both of those things can be true. And at the end of the day, and I know you and I were texting this, like, I hated the idea of trying to rush him back from the surgery to try to get him out there to coach.
Yeah.
You know, as a KU fan and alum, it's like, all right, I'd love to win and keep rolling and especially try to go back-to-back, but I'd also love for him to just now have some time off and relax and not have to worry about trying to rush back to get back to coaching because, you know, for his long-term health, obviously he needs to take some time off and really recover from having those stents put in.
Yeah, absolutely, and full agreement there, which is just it is not ha-ha funny, but it's like, huh, funny in the same way that we talk about so many times about just players not being available due to injuries or whatever. This is just a really weirdly close analogous form of that for a coach who just could, like, to be clear, I have not heard a single person go, I can't believe Bill wasn't out there coaching. Like, I got to get out there for it's a big game. Like, no, you don't. It's just, I'm sure it's an unsatisfying cap for KU fans to have on the season. You mentioned the refs, and so I'm going to share Beards McFly's stat of the day, which is that there were as many fouls called as there were field goals made in this game, 48 to 48.
Yikes.
I just don't like watching basketball that way. I know you don't either. Is there this is no sour grapes. It just was bad for everybody, but it's also bad for the viewer. Like, is this just going to be the way that basketball keeps trending? Is there a pivot coming? Is there a way for the sport to keep that type of basketball from appearing on my screen when all we want to see is these kids hoop?
Right. Well, look, as a ref, at some point you have to kind of evaluate how you're doing and what you're doing and realize, like, as many off-the-ball fouls that were called, like, that's the brutal part. You know, like, early on in the game, they kind of were letting him play. And I was like, all right, this is good. And then all of a sudden you look up and you're like, all right, KJ has three fouls, and now Uday has three fouls. And it was like, these things are starting to pile up quickly. And then it was as if, like, each ref was, like, outdoing the other one in terms of, like, off-ball fouls. Like, I'd be interested to see how many of those foul calls were off the ball because it seemed like I've just never seen that many called that were away from the action. And, you know, look, earlier in the year we were wondering, like, man, are they just calling too many fouls in the Big 12 or are these games just that physical? And, you know, a few people that I trust, like, these games are just really physical. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the truth here in this game. Like, there were some fouls, like Uday in particular. He just committed some really stupid fouls that, like, those start to add up, and now you don't get the benefit of the doubt when you've got close calls at the end of the game and you foul out because of it. And, like, same is true for KJ. So I'm not sitting here saying that they weren't fouls. It's just that they played a physical brand of basketball all year in a physical conference all year, and it seemed like there were stretches in that game where they were allowing them to get away with certain things, and then they weren't. And you can't second-guess those foul calls. They were physical. It's just the fact that they didn't call those same calls given the same context in a different situation. So, like, sometimes that was a foul, sometimes it wasn't. And if you're a baseball player, you just want a consistent strike zone. And that didn't seem to be the case in this game. And, again, it didn't – I mean, one way or the other. Like, it impacted KU, but that's just because the rotation's so short. And, like, KJ's such a huge piece of what they do offensively, defensively. So his foul trouble killed them for that regard. But it wasn't like, you know, all these fouls being called on Kansas and Arkansas wasn't getting whistled. Like, they were both dealing with it all game. It just impacted Kansas more because Kansas just didn't have the depth to be able to overcome it, especially in their front court. But yeah, I mean, it's and the other parts of this too, Josh, is the way that they just kind of cobble these refereeing crews together.
Yeah.
Where as opposed to, like, having a Big 12 crew or an SEC crew, you've got, like, one SEC guy, one Big 12 guy. That's the thing that I wish they'd go away from. Like, you know, get an SEC crew in to call, you know, that game, or a Big Ten crew to call that game, right? Like, get the crew. I'd rather that. I'd rather Arkansas and Kansas play with an SEC, all SEC crew than I would what we saw yesterday, which is a bunch of guys that don't rest together, that don't really know, like, the teamwork part of it, like, that dynamic, which really exists in refereeing, too.
100%. The NFL keeps doing it with the bleeping Super Bowl. It's, let's get Carl Sheffers and the All-Star crew out here. That just seems to so fundamentally, Carl Sheffers aside, that seems to so fundamentally misunderstand how difficult it seems. I have never come on the radio and be like, I could be a ref right now. I could do a better job. Because I couldn't. It would be a disaster. My head would be spinning. I know it's a hard job. Why make it harder on them by saying, hey, here's a guy you met on Tuesday. Good luck.
Right. Like, these guys work with each other all year. Like, they have an idea. It's like the point guard who knows where certain guys are going to be in certain spots. And, you know, that it's the same with crews in officiating. And so it's like, well, this guy, we know that he's going to be in position here. And whatever it is, like the game within the game kind of comp, you know, component of it.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. And you're right. The NFL does it. I don't know why college basketball does it. I just don't know why. I'd rather, instead of these all-star crews, like, just give me the best crews all year that know how to work with one another.
Yeah. And if you need to do the math and try to keep an all-SEC crew from doing a Big 12 SEC game or whatever, fine. What basketball still seems to have? A lot of conferences. Give me a great crew from a lower level. I don't care. It's just, this is such a bizarre way to do it. I don't know how that's where we've landed. Let's talk about Mizzou, though, real quick, because it's so funny. Because I know Mizzou fans are walking around today like Michael Cera in Arrested Development, just kind of dragging their feet, hanging their head a little bit, because they lost to a 15 seed in the second round. Mizzou wasn't supposed to be in this tournament this year. They sure as hell weren't supposed to win a game this year. They do, and I'm telling Mizzou fans, just pretend you lost to Arizona, because at that point, I think maybe the pain softened some. But what did you see from Mizzou, not just in the game against Princeton, but in the run they had this year, that if you take either number out of the 15 seed, this would just be the end of an outrageously successful year for them?
Yeah, no question. And look, I mean, at least it wasn't losing to a 15 seed in the first round like we've seen from Mizzou in past.
Exactly.
Right? So the fact that you got a really good team in the second round that probably was underseeded at 15 and, you know, and just shot lights out in the game. I think, you know, Dennis Gates, like, they found their guy.
Yes.
You know, even though they've had more success with previous coaches in the regular season, you kind of compare this Dennis Gates to Frank Hayes, some of these previous coaches, and it's like, this guy is on another level. Like, he's going to be very, very successful at Mizzou. And you're right, this is probably a year ahead of schedule, but, you know, give him a chance. Let's see how he recruits and he mixes in personnel in terms of, like, all right, what's your dynamic there? Like, are you going to lean heavier on transfer portal, or are you going to lean heavy into recruiting? I think there's an opportunity there to differentiate yourself, whereas a lot of coaches right now are leaning heavy into the portal, which I get, but that leaves opportunities then for high school recruiting. So I'm sort of curious to see how that plays out with Gates. But, I mean, look, a lot of people didn't expect Mizzou to win in the first round. So the fact that they get through, they break through, they get into the second round, I know you want, you know, you thought you got a better draw with Princeton in the second round, but, and that team's a really good basketball team. We're about to see that play out as Princeton gets Creighton, who, you know, I mean, that's going to be a fantastic matchup, because Creighton is a team that I think, you know, towards the end of the year, are playing like a top 10 team. And Princeton, I mean, they're playing at a high level too. It's just consistently underseeded Ivy teams, and they're, a lot of times they're able to exceed those expectations because they're just not seated where they should be given how good they are. I think the committee needs to do a better job and reevaluate how they seed Ivy teams.
I think you snuck in earlier that you said you had Creighton making the Final Four run. I want to know how your Final Four is looking, and if you've got any that you've got to redo, who you like now.
Yeah, my East is all messed up. My Final Four is Creighton, Texas, UConn, and Duke. So I'm really good except for Duke, because I have UConn beating Duke in the national championship. So I actually had UConn beating Kansas in the next round because of UConn's size. So had Kansas even made it that far, I wasn't sure that they would be able to get past UConn. So I think UConn wins the national title, but I'll tell you, Texas could very well win the national title too.
And if you're retooling out of the left side of the bracket?
Man, I might take K-State right now.
Woo! Over Bama, over Creighton?
See, I never really liked Bama. I would definitely take K-State to come out of the East, but I would probably take Creighton or Bama to come out of the South and win the Final Four if I were retooling it for sure.
I would settle for that Final Four because I also had UConn and Texas because I know what I'm talking about. It's not just March magic just coming out of my bracket. No. I knew exactly what I was scouting for. So I would love to see obviously K-State make that run. I want to see UConn and Texas. I think that game is already. I am pre-excited for a game that almost certainly, now that we've spoken about it, will not be occurring, but the rest of the way should be a blast. Ari, will you just go ahead and do the hype man job for yourself, let people know where they can catch this Jerome Tang interview tomorrow and anywhere else they can grab your work here as March Madness rolls on?
Of course. At Ari Sports on Twitter, A-R-I Sports, and of course check out SiriusXM's Big 12 Radio, Channel 375. Of course, you want to keep it tuned to 810 because that's where you're going to get your great sports news from all the great people at Sports Radio 810. But, you know, why not also mix in a little SiriusXM, Big 12 Radio, Channel 375. So, yeah, Jerome Tang tomorrow morning. We recorded the interview after the show today. So he's awesome. As a Kansas fan, I don't like Jerome Tang at K-State because of how good of a coach he is.
Look, as a bit of an unaffiliated party, I'm very, very down for both of these Kansas schools to have coaches and programs that stay front of mind for a while. I think it'll be a lot of fun and hopefully a good time for you guys covering the Big 12 as well. Ari, I appreciate you carving some March Madness time out here for us. Looking forward to seeing and hearing the rest of the coverage again on Twitter at Ari Sports, A-R-I. I like that you spelled that. I'm guessing that has been an issue in the past. I didn't even think about it, but there's no E at the end of Briscoe either while we're all doing our name
right.
Spelling. Ari, we'll chat again soon, my friend. Thank you very much.
You're the best, Briscoe. Take care, brother. Be well.
You too. It's Ari Temkin. Again, you can catch him on SiriusXM. Follow him on Twitter at Ari Sports for all the other stuff he does there. It's Josh Briscoe and Beards McFly here with you in the zone. Jason Anderson out until a little bit later in the week. I think we expect him back on Thursday? Day-to-day at this point. Oh, God. Oh, no. He's day-to-day. No, it's all right. He'll be back. We think. And we'll be back, certainly, right after this, because we have another region of the Bracket of Sound to catch up on. As teams kept falling, we've got some more great clips to say goodbye to. We'll do that next in The Zone.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
I remember things poorly.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Still The Zone here on 810. Joshua Briscoe, Beards McFly with you. Jason Anderson back later this week. We've talked a lot of hoops, justifiably so, because, you know, I'm going to check my calendar really quick. Still March. We're good. Still justified. But we have another tournament happening right alongside the men's NCAA tournament. We have our tournament of sound, our bracket of sound, a tournament of audio clips from the last 365 days, from the beginning of last year's tournament through the beginning of this year's tournament. We assigned seed numbers to some of our favorite clips of the year. They attach themselves to teams in the real life tournament. Then they go just as far as the actual team does. Sometimes this has tremendous results. Sometimes bad things happen to good audio. And that is what has happened so far in the It Needed to Be Said region. You may know it as the East. You may know it as the region where Purdue was the number one seed. You may know Purdue as the one seed who lost to a 16 for only the second time in NCAA history. I was thrilled at the time. It was hilarious. I love watching a 16 seed beat a 1. It's been great both times. I've enjoyed it. But today I came in and I looked at the bracket of sound. It meant that we were going to have to say goodbye to our number one seed in the It Needed to Be Said region. So we say goodbye to this sound.
No fouling play for blocking the back. Timeout.
Oh!
Another bad thing about Purdue losing. My bracket and this sound.
Oh. Oh, and Beers.
No foul in play for blocking the back. Timeout.
Oh. Carl Sheffers being verbally bludgeoned by the crowd at Arrowhead.
And Andy Reid.
Andy Reid.
That might have been literal. We don't know.
We didn't see it, but we definitely saw. We didn't see physical altercations, but we could see the steam coming off of his. There was emotional bludgeoning going on there, no question. One more time to the one seed, please, Beards. One more time. Let's hear this art for the last time this tournament.
No foul and Clint for blocking the back. Timeout.
And it's frustrating because while the 16 seed Fairleigh Dickinson did absolutely hold their own, this was a dogfight of a matchup anyway. Fairleigh Dickinson ended up falling short to FAU, so we also say goodbye to the 16 seed Fairleigh Dickinson.
As a happily married man, etc. But
how happy, Danny?
Pretty darn happy.
Okay.
Most days. Maybe there was a little conflagration earlier this week that might have had me changing my mind on that particular day. But, you know, nobody really likes being called a jackass. You need help. Okay.
Okay. That one also is bounced by FAU, which I will say is a great piece of sound. We may reset the tournament later in the week so you know exactly who you're rooting for in the Sweet 16 and beyond. But FAU advances over Fairleigh Dickinson to match them up with Tennessee. But Tennessee first eliminated Duke. That was the 5 seed, so we say goodbye to this audio.
Coach, you may be aware there you are. Ugh. Top 5 in a poll of the most handsome coaches in the NFL.
That's what I'm talking about.
Did they underrate you?
I was wondering why I wasn't first.
Tough team goes down there. Big fan of that audio. Hate to see it go, but such is the tourney. We also need to go back to the 8 seed who FAU passed first. They defeated Memphis by a point, which means this sound goes home.
Wait a minute. Let's do stay with O'Hearn. Were the homers hit off a guy named Shecky McUnderhand? Or was it somebody you've actually heard of?
Jeff Abel.
Steve DeMotion,
Andy Ball.
Oh my!
Was it hit off Willie Waivers?
Yeah,
I have a name in mind, but I'm not saying it.
Eduardo DFA.
It's a tough matchup and a tough out, but I did just go back and look again. I am a fan of the 4-9 matchup we have with Tennessee and FAU, representing some good audio. But the Ryan O'Hearn jokes are eliminated. As is, well, let's go to Providence first. Kentucky first beat Providence, sending home the 11 seed, represented by?
It says something about someone coming up to the door, that they can't get through that door, and being told by the security system, I'm sorry, you have to go around.
And the guy tried 4 more doors.
And the person right behind them walked up and went, can I? He's like, no, you have to go around. Yeah. You were 3 feet away when I just said this. Oh, but it's me, guy in tank top.
I'm still a little bit nervous that at some point I have been me, guy in tank top, but good work from Curtis, representing the 11 seed, goes home. Obviously, K-State continues rolling on, so the Jerome Tang audio gets to continue as well, but they first ousted Montana State, the 14 seed, so we say goodbye to the 14.
It's kind of difficult to describe to people who are unfamiliar with it, as you might have been.
Patrick Mahomes?
I have, yeah.
Have you?
Yes, I have met Patrick.
He's one of my heroes.
Oh, is that right?
That's true. Oh,
okay.
I root for that team, even though I've never lived there.
Yes,
I think he is just phenomenal to watch.
Apropos of
nothing.
But I was going to talk about the season finale of Barry, and you were talking about the season finale of two Super Bowls ago.
I was hoping Patrick was in it.
Next time you come on,
yes.
We'll make sure Mahomes is on the phone. We'll do that.
Truly?
You like him that much, huh?
I think that his ability is such a cut above. He is so passionate in the way he plays.
Yes.
He is so improvisorial in the way he plays. He is so sure. I just think it is instinctually great, actually.
Okay. Well, he now knows that, and we will make sure that we'll make this happen.
Yeah.
It would be my
does
honor.
Does he listen?
Yes.
Patrick, hi.
He does.
How are you?
These things...
So can I just say, no, if Patrick is listening, I'd like to, you know, we make a great chicken stuffed with ricotta and spinach.
Yes.
With an unbelievable reduction. It can be yours if you're here in L.A.
Well, the Chiefs come play the Chargers, right? The Chiefs
they
play
do.
The Chargers.
They do, actually.
We'll make
yeah.
this happen.
Those guys are good, too.
Yeah, they
I
are.
I mean, they're good quarterbacks.
Yeah, they are.
They are not Mahomes.
Henry Winkler is right about that, but he is still eliminated, as is the 10 seed representing USC. The 10 seed represented by...
We were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right? We didn't buy one player. All right?
It's amazing. Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out about a guy that a lot of things you don't want to know. We built him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past or anybody that's ever coached with him. You can find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it. And it's despicable. It really is. And it's a shame we have to sit up here and have this conversation about things we do. And it's personal to us? Yes, it is. It's personal to A&M. It's personal to our players. It's personal to our coaches and everybody involved. And I know the guy. Know him really well. It's amazing that we're allowed to do those things. It's really despicable. And I hate it. For our players who are coming here, who did things the right way, have done things the right way, and will continue to do things the right way, I apologize to you, the people who insult you publicly the way they're doing it. And our fans, I apologize to you guys for people saying those things about Texas A&M. But promise you this, there are no violations. There are nothing wrong. It's the second time we've had to do this with grown men who don't get their way and want to pout, throw a fit, and act up. Just go ask all the people who work for him. You'll know exactly what he's about. I always said this. My dad always told me this. When people show you who they are, believe them. He's showing you who he is.
College football beef gone from the tournament. We got a few more pieces out of the It Needed to Be Said region to say goodbye to, plus Kiki Leaks and the McNipples region still also have to be limited. We also, Beards, I'll make this point as we head to a break. We don't have to get all these done today. No tournament games happening tonight, so we can keep chipping away here at the bracket of sound in the zone here on Sports 3810 WHB.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
That was a... upsetting sound that I had to make with my mouth.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We'll continue to eliminate from our bracket of sound when Mick Schaefer of KSHB joins us coming up next hour here in the zone. We've made it almost halfway through. We'll use the next couple days to eliminate region by region, as we also have to, of course, you know, talk about all the games that happened over the course of the weekend. K-State victorious. And thank goodness, man, because I just really genuinely did not want to come in here today and just say goodbye to all three local teams. Because, look, it's way more fun to talk about when these teams keep playing. It's one of the reasons that I think K-State and Mizzou fans have gotten tired of hearing other people talk about Kansas as much as we have over the years. Because KU plays longer than you do usually. Not the case this year, though, so K-State will get the spotlight around these parts, very deservingly so, as they make it to the Sweet 16. We'll talk about them, Mizzou, KU, anything else with Mick Schaefer, KSHB 41, next.